Hello, hello, and welcome once again to another edition of a podcast that we call Things We Said Today. This is a Beatles program that centers mainly on what's going on news-wise in the world of the Beatles. I'm Ken Michaels, one of the co-hosts of the show, best known for the syndicated Beatles show called Every Little Thing, and I'm being joined by my co-host, the writer for Beatles Examiner and many Examiner columns, Steve Marinucci.
Hi, Ken. Hi, everybody.
On today's show, we're going to be talking about a book that came out on John's birthday, October the 9th, and it's called The John Lennon Letters. And this book is comprised of mainly letters that John Lennon wrote throughout his lifetime to various people. He wrote to friends of his, to fans, to people in the media, a variety of people in this book. And we're going to talk about this book and share our feelings about it. And Steve, first of all, got to ask you whether or not you enjoyed reading the John Lennon letters.
I very much enjoyed reading the book. There was a lot of information in it that I thought was new. Even more interesting, I thought it was very revealing as far as John goes. There was a lot of the stereotypes that you have about John, or I should say some of the stereotypes about John, don't hold true in the book. He comes across at various times in the book as very soft-hearted, very loving, and not the hard-edged guy that everybody, you know, that his image is. And there's just a lot of inside information from various points in his life that has not been covered in various books. And when it has, it obviously didn't have the insight of the letters.
Right.
It brings a lot of that to the front. So I think it's a very valuable book. I think it probably was not expected to be as valuable and as good as it is, but it's really good. I think it's a great book. And The nice thing, it was assembled by Hunter Davies, who wrote the Beatles biography. It was assembled without editorial direction by Yoko Ono. Yoko didn't have any say.
Right.
So there was really a lot of. It's just a well done book. That's basically what it boils down to.
I mean, I remember reading in your own column about this that Yoko did not interfere in any way with this book, and it kind of reminded me very much of the Lennon in New York City project that came out.
Yeah, except I think this is a little
different. In that regard, I'm saying, because Yoko didn't have any input.
Right. This is, like I say, though, this is a little different because, Yoko had probably seen not all the letters, but at least some of them that were in there, because, you know, some of them came from, you know, stuff that she had, but there are some that she probably had never seen, and it's really wonderful that they gathered them all together. And, of course, a couple of the letters made big news right away, the one where he goes off on George Martin, which I really think, you know, in the context of the book is really minor, and I don't think it indicates any kind of extensive conflict with George Martin at all.
Well, let me tell you something. I really enjoyed this book myself, but when I first heard about it, there was some trepidation on my part because I felt that John Lennon's life was so much out there. He said so much, he was so revealing in his interviews and in his music. How much can we learn that would really shock us?
And there were articles out there asking that question, whether or not this was too much. And I think, I don't see how you can ask that question with a book like this. With some of the second-person biographies, you know, you can ask that when people are, whose connections to the Beatles are, you know, are slim. You can ask that question. But this, being that these are his letters, I don't think you can ask that. I think this is an even better book overall than Barry Miles many years from now.
A better book? I don't know about that. I mean, you've got in that book Paul talking about all the songs from the Beatle days and commenting about them, something that a lot of people have craved for.
I think it is because Paul, I think, tends to manage what comes out about him, and I think he had a lot to say about the Barry Miles book, whereas the Lennon book is basically raw Lennon, you know, unadulterated Lennon, and I think that's the value of the Lennon book. Maybe if we ever get a Paul McCartney letters book someday, or a George Harrison letters book, which that would be interesting, or a Ringo Starr letters book, that would be, you know, those would be very interesting.
Right.
But like I said, this is raw, unadulterated, you know, as far as it goes, Lennon, and I think that's the really good thing about it.
I think one of the things that you in particular appreciate, and you were kind of just saying this, is that you see the tender side of John.
Right.
In these letters. But I do think that it's very important, like you were just mentioning the letter written to George Martin, that you also see the bitter side of him, because it's all those sides that made up who John was.
Right. You see all sides of John. But and I think that people tend to focus in on things like that George Martin letter as major points, as you know, the biggest points in his life, or the most important things in his life. And while, you know, you don't want to ignore something like that with George Martin, at the same time, the long history of John Lennon and George Martin would really put that kind of an incident in kind of in the background. It really takes it out of context, and I think that's important too.
Well, why is that taking it out of context? That's kind of like saying that when John wrote "How Do You Sleep," you know, he really didn't have those feelings for Paul, even though John said that in an interview, that he was just writing his, you know, his frustration and dealing with Paul and putting that into a song. He said that's what that was, but how do you know that he didn't really feel those particular feelings?
Right, and that's exactly with the incident with the George Martin letter that, you know, that everybody kind of focused in on as far as the book goes, and so I think you have to put the whole, you know, John's whole relationship with George Martin into context. And there were so many, I mean, the Strawberry Fields Forever workup, for example. I mean, that was a case where the two of them got along, you know, where they worked together.
Mm.
At the same time, there's also Let It Be thing where they didn't want, George Martin involved, and that, you know.
Right.
That's, you know, there's too many incidents to kind of slam, to make a big deal, or I shouldn't say make a major, you know, turning point in their relationship, because the way things went, there have been so many incidents between them in the course of, from the beginning to, you know, even after the Beatles, that, you know, something like that really doesn't make sense to make it, you know, as important as some people were trying to do.
Well, the letters to George Martin and to Paul McCartney were used to help sell the book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what would make a splash.
Sure.
Can you believe what John said to George Martin or to Paul McCartney? And actually, you know, I've heard, especially during the 1970-71 period when John was at his most bitter, I've heard similar things said. And that's why I'm saying that nothing really shocks me. The thing is, if you're a student of John Lennon and you followed everything that he said in his interviews, he changed his opinions all the time.
Right.
To the point where you couldn't hold him down to one particular opinion about certain things. You know, he could be blasting Paul McCartney one minute and praising him the next.
Right.
And that's the way that John was, and you have to understand that about John. But right. That doesn't mean that when he does blast, or when he does say, when he praises somebody, that he didn't mean it at the same time.
Sure.
There are many sides to any one person, and John was, to me, a very complex person.
Exactly.
You know, and who's to say that we're all not that way in many
right.
ways? It's a matter of evolving and changing your opinion through life.
I was gonna say that, and for somebody like John Lennon, who, you know, whose life is focused on so intently, you know, to pinpoint one little incident at one point in time and make that, you know, and blow that up, the way, you know, I mean, there are, of course, incidents going along all the time, for, you know, in public life, but I think you also have to look, you can't forget the overall picture.
And, right.
And sometimes that does happen, and with things like that. But I mean, the book is a great. I think it's an excellent reference material, excellent source of reference material for the way John was. And
I thought that I would read just a little bit of this letter to George Martin, so the people who are listening right now can know exactly what we're talking about.
Sure.
He says here, and this is actually written to George Martin and to Richard Williams. This is in response to an interview that George Martin gave to Melody Maker. This is back in 1971. And apparently George Martin was taking too much credit for the Beatles' success, at least in John's eyes. Mm-hmm. And John says here, when people ask me questions about what did George Martin really do for you, I have only one answer. What does he do now? I noticed you had no answer for that. It's not a put-down, it's the truth. I sent the postcard about the David Frost show, and he's talking about a postcard that he sent to George Martin because George was very kind to him about the song Across the Universe in there, because she said nice things about Across the Universe. For Martin to state that he was painting a sound picture is pure hallucination, referring to Revolution Number 9. Ask any of the other people involved. The final editing Yoko and I did alone, which took 4 hours. Of course, George Martin was a great help in translating our music technically when we needed it, but for the cameraman to take credit from the director is a bit too much. Those are powerful words there.
Mm-hmm. True.
And I can't, you know, he is John Lennon. He has a right to say what he has to, but George Martin, I had the chance to interview George Martin with a friend of mine a good 10 years ago. And one of the things that I remember about the interview, I said to George Martin, I can't imagine what a song like Strawberry Fields Forever would have been like had you not been the producer. And George Martin said to me, Strawberry Fields is a great song before he was ever involved with it. And I was kind of taken aback when he said that, because I'm thinking, you're being overly modest here. George Martin did not give me the impression that he was taking the credit for the Beatles' success. He has said on numerous occasions that the reason why the Beatles' music has this lasting value is because the music itself is strong. The songs are strong. It all comes down to the material first. And the production can play a very big part in the way that you appreciate the music. But if they're not strong songs first, then it doesn't really matter too much what you add to it. So he was really giving credit there to John for writing a great song.
Right.
It was a great song if you listen to Take One on the Beatles anthology. That's a great recording right there. It's still a great song anyway, but I still think what George Martin added to that song in terms of the production, the arrangement that he did to that, you know, that helped to really shape the whole sound and what we experience when we hear it. And I didn't think that George Martin was really giving himself enough credit. And but I understand his point of view, though.
And I think it's disingenuous for anybody, even John Lennon, to try and take away what he did for them. I mean, he did have a role. He may not have composed the songs, but he, you know, had a very vital role in the Beatles' music. And I don't know that John was trying to do that. He might have been snippy at one point to kind of, you know, make a point. But I don't think he, you know, he put George Martin down like that all the time.
I think this is one isolated example.
Right.
And then there's an interview, the one he gave Dennis Elsis in 1974, where he's giving George a lot of credit for knowing what instruments to use on Beatles songs. He would say to him, this is what an oboe sounds like.
Right.
You know, he is very helpful in knowing what sounds were necessary on Beatles recordings.
Mm-hmm.
The arrangements that George wrote, the string arrangements, the brass arrangements, all of that added so much to Beatle recordings, and it even goes far beyond that.
Right.
I mean, one particular example that George likes to bring up is Can't Buy Me Love, where he actually suggested that the song start with the chorus of the song. It was going to start with the verse. I'll buy you a diamond ring, my friend. Just an example like that, where he made a suggestion to the arrangement of the song, and where the chorus starts the song, which really was such a great hook to start the song with. Just suggestions like that. It's immeasurable how much he contributed to Beatles recordings.
But I mean, overall, as far as the book goes, you know, there's just so much of that kind of, you know, inside, in-depth information that, you know, so-called biographies don't have. And that's where, you know, that's where I think this book is really valuable, and it's worth whatever you pay to get it. I think it's a wonderful book.
Hmm. Tell me some other things, Steve, that you learned that maybe you hadn't heard before.
The letter to Freddie Lennon, I think, was another interesting moment. I mean, we all knew that he had tried to connect with Freddie Lennon, but to actually read what he was saying in 1967 was interesting. the letter to Cynthia in 1962 from Hamburg, where he says, I love, love, love you, and I'm missing you like mad.
Well, there's a lot of letters in this book that he wrote to Cynthia around that time, and you would think he was totally infatuated with her.
Right. Which kind of makes, you know, later on even more interesting, but the book is just like pinpoints of his life, you know. You kind of, it's a opening a window for a couple of seconds to see things that were going on with him, and it's as I said, it's unadulterated. It's, you know, it's him as he really was. And that's where this book is just so wonderful, so valuable.
I want to mention a few things that I found fascinating, because I don't want to give too much away in the book. I'd like everyone who's listening that's interested in this book to pick it up. But I will tell you a few things. First of all, the fact that he wrote to the fans early on, that tells you something. Because for all that John said later on, that the Beatles sold out, or he was embarrassed by how much the Beatles had sold out, referring to when Brian Epstein got involved and they had to wear the suits and they shortened their act to short concerts. You know, he was making every effort back then to connect with the fans and to build an audience and to build a fan base.
Right.
He was starving for success, just like the other Beatles were.
And he was friendly with some of them even later. I talked to Lizzie Bravo, who was one of the two voices on Across the Universe, and she, her letter is in the book, and she told me the story about that, and I wrote about it, how she and John connected, and how they, you know, how the letter came to be, and that's kind of interesting, you know.
But even later on in life, if you follow this book, there were times when people wrote to John at the Dakota, and he would randomly pick a letter out and write back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he spent time with the fans. And not only that, this may seem like a minor thing to you, but every letter, every postcard, everything that he wrote back, he signed it love. Did you notice that? Even to strangers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and or love John and Yoko, or love John, Yoko, and Sean.
Mm-hmm.
Some things that I found really fascinating in this book, first of all, John and Stu wrote to each other, which is not a shock, but in the letters that they wrote, Stu referred to himself as Jesus, and John was John the Baptist. Also, and I found this really interesting, he was writing notes for the Imagine album, and you don't actually see all the notes because I think part of them were lost, but he was writing about individual songs, and he actually says that Give Me Some Truth, that Paul helped him write the middle eight of that song.
Mm-hmm.
He never said that anywhere in any interview. And, you know, all the years that you're used to the recordings coming out the way they did, and,
right,
you know, the songwriting credits, and right, says John Lennon for Give Me Some Truth. It doesn't say John Lennon, Paul McCartney. But here's the only time when I've ever seen that John gave credit to Paul for helping him write Give Me Some Truth.
Mm-hmm.
He also said that How Do You Sleep was George's best solo to date, guitar solo, which I thought was really nice. And also just the fact that the last few years of his life, he was really writing a lot to his family in England, especially his cousin. It's actually, I think, Lila, because misspelled it. It's supposed
there's
to
been some, L-I-E-L-A. There's,
it's supposed to be, I think it's L-I-E-L-A. But
well, actually, I'm looking in the book now, and they've got it. They've got a mistake here. It's L-E-I, not L-I-E. But they've got a misprint.
Uh-huh.
But there apparently was some word after he was killed that he had actually planned a trip to England. It is L-E-I, by the way. I'm looking through the letters now.
Okay.
You can see it clearly. But, yeah, he had supposedly been planning a trip to England after, you know, that would have happened after December 1980. Which is a shame.
You know, it's kind of ironic. You follow the last few years of John's life. He did a lot of traveling.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Japan. He went to Hong Kong. He went to Egypt. And, you know, but he didn't go to England, strangely
right.
enough. You'd think that might have been, like, the first choice to visit his relatives.
Right. There's one letter here I'm looking at where he's talking, where he actually wrote notes on the Hamburg sessions, Hamburg Star Club tracks, which is interesting considering that the Beatles stopped him, which is
right.
Bad.
And it's also kind of ironic. I just finished reading the book the last couple of days, but when I picked up the book, I was in the middle of it, and just a few days ago, we learned about the passing of Pete Bennett, who was a promotion man that worked for the Beatles and many other artists. Did
right.
a lot to promote the solo records of the Beatles and Apple Records. But it just so happens, I'm picking up the book, and right where I left off, there happens to be a letter that John wrote to Pete Bennett regarding the fact that Pete wanted to be a guest on the Mike Douglas show. And Pete had helped to arrange John and Yoko being co-hosts with Mike Douglas for that whole week. So that was kind of ironic that happened then. And something else I found really interesting was that John compiled a list of songs for Mexican EPs on the Beatles featuring George and Ringo. And he had a track listing for each. Certain things like that. And this all happened, after the Beatle breakup. The fact
right.
that he was even thinking about that, you might have thought his mind was far removed from the Beatles. But he was actually doing this. And he also, he sent Paul, and this was in 71, in the middle of, that heated period there between John and Paul. He sent Paul an acetate of what John thought was the Decca Audition recordings. But I think, according to what Hunter Davies wrote, most likely it was BBC broadcasts of some of the same material. But he actually took the time to send that to Paul, which I found really interesting. There's one other thing that I do want to bring up here, and you tell me whether or not I should give away what's in this book about the Butcher cover and what John wrote on one of them. Do you remember?
No, I don't. I don't remember. What year was it?
It's towards the end of the book, so I think it was probably the late 70s. But John actually said that his original idea on the Butcher cover
I've got it.
Was to have Paul decapitated. But Paul wouldn't accept that. He wouldn't agree to it. Which, I don't know if he was kidding when he wrote this, but this is on the inscription on a Butcher cover that John wrote on. So I found that really interesting. There's all sorts of things just like this in the book. And I think it gives you so much more insight. You also get to see the style of writing that John had.
Right.
His sense of humor, his wordplay, which if you're familiar with what he wrote in his books, like in his own right, in The Spaniard and the Works, it's very similar. And sometimes it's very hard to understand what John's writing about. You have to really pick apart each sentence and try to figure out what does he mean here. Because he plays around with words a lot.
But on the other hand, there are several examples of that in the book. But on the other hand, there's also some very straightforward writing, too.
Right.
Where he's not playing around. He's being, he's talking to anybody, So, yeah, there's both kinds of John. This is just such an incredibly informative book. It's just wonderful. It really is.
Yeah. And also, one other thing, towards the end of the book, there's a list of things that John asked his assistant, Fred Seaman, to go out and buy for him. And if you're curious about what John was into musically, there's a number of things mentioned here. And one of the things that I enjoyed about the Lennon interviews that he gave right before he died, he would mention some of the artists that he was listening to at the moment. It might be the B-52s, because he was noticing how they were influenced by Yoko, or it could have been the Talking Heads. He did not denounce disco music. He said it was all a part of the same wave of rock and roll. And then you see the list that they have here in this book, and he's asking his assistant to buy Hot Stuff by Donna Summer, the Roaches' new album. So he was into a lot of this stuff.
Which is kind of funny because, Yoko went on to have a big career in dance music that she still has.
Right.
So, and in fact, that one letter you're talking about where he's asking about the music, he says, asked for a copy of Day Tripper by J.T. Singer, which is interesting that he's actually asking about a cover, a Beatle cover.
Now, you're talking about James Taylor.
Oh, okay. Is that what he's talking
about?
Yeah,
it was James Taylor. he did a cover of Day Tripper. And it wasn't at that time. It was a few years before that. It was on his Flag album. And I always liked his cover of it. But somehow John found out about it and he wanted a copy of it. But just knowing that and knowing the music that he was listening to then, I think he referred to Blondie at the time as someone that he liked to listen to. And there's actually a letter, or it might have been a postcard, that he wrote for Ringo. He was suggesting songs that Ringo should cover.
Right.
And he said, Heart of Glass, he wrote here, it's the type of stuff y'all should do, great and simple. And he cited that song, Heart of Glass.
I can't imagine Ringo doing Heart of Glass.
Neither can I. But, you know, just the fact that he wrote Ringo, and we find out about this,
mm-hmm.
apart from the songs that he wrote for Ringo, or that he was considering for Ringo, like Life Begins at 40 or Nobody Told Me at the time. But it's just, you know, a wonderful book in many ways. You find out a few things about John, or in, for some of us, maybe a lot of things about John that he never knew before, and you really get to capture his style of writing, the many different styles of writing, and his sense of humor. And
here's another interesting letter from Christmas 1979, talking about music. It says Dylan and Randy Born Again Newman albums.
Right.
There you go.
Oh, you know, I'm just now connecting that because of what you said. Because at the time, Dylan was doing the Born Again thing. You know,
really? That didn't even hit me. But yeah, you're right. I was just thinking of the two of them separately.
But the Randy Newman album was called Born Again.
Born Again, yeah.
That's kind of ironic.
Yes.
That he kind of linked those two together. He also wanted a copy of Back to the Egg.
Oh, I see that. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Interesting.
So you would think somebody like him shouldn't even have to have somebody go out and buy it for him.
You know,
Capitol Records should have just sent it to him. He's John Lennon, you know. This is a songwriting partner.
You would think, now obviously things would have been different.
Hmm. But anyway, I would definitely recommend getting this book.
Yeah, I would too. And if you're looking for something, for example, for a Beatle friend that for Christmas, definitely give this some consideration. This is a great. It would make a great Christmas gift for somebody that doesn't have it. It is also interesting, by the way, that in the interview I did with him, he mentioned that he's hoping to do a new edition of the Beatles biography, and he's also hoping to get more letters, Lennon letters.
So he can do a volume two.
So, and in fact, he gave me an email address, which I will mention here. It's johnlennonletters@hotmail.co.uk. If anyone out there has a letter from John that they would be interested in sharing with Hunter Davies. But yeah, that's kind of interesting.
And you have to figure that even though there's a lot of letters in here, there's plenty that didn't make it, and that's out there, that he sent to fans or friends or whoever.
Yeah, he didn't specifically, because I asked him if there were enough letters left out, and he didn't say specifically that he had left any out, but he did say he hoped more would come in. He also said he's doing a Beatles lyrics book with handwritten, with the original lyric sheets.
Mm. And I love that. Mm-hmm. And I eat that stuff up.
So that's going to be another interesting book to look forward to.
Yeah, if you've ever gone to the John Lennon art exhibit that's been at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, there was a whole floor of just John's handwritten lyrics.
I saw the one at the Grammy Museum. It was a small exhibit. It wasn't a big one. It was quite tiny, actually.
Mm.
But it did have some lyrics, and it had a lot of, you know, it had some clothing and some, you know, personal artifacts and stuff, and a guitar. And it was very interesting to see that.
Right.
Very interesting to see that. And it was actually, when I saw it, it was located right next door to the Roy Orbison exhibit, which they had not opened yet. So the two of them were kind of bumped against each other. It was cool.
Okay. So to sum it all up, we definitely recommend picking up this book.
Very much.
And hope that Hunter will have another one in the works, because I certainly enjoyed this one. And if you folks would like to get in touch with us, there's any number of ways you can do so. First of all, we have our own Facebook page under the name of the show, Things We Said Today. You can also check out Steve's own columns, the Beatles Examiner columns, and he has columns for Paul and George and Ringo, and other Examiner columns too. And the way to do that is by what, Steve?
Go to examiner.com and just search for my name. I do, as Ken says, I do vintage rock and roll. I do TV on DVD, and I do Paul McCartney Examiner, George Harrison Examiner, Ringo Starr Examiner, and Beatles Examiner, which I've been really busy with lately. There's been some incredible stuff happening that I've been writing about. So,
and Steve is glued to his computer.
I'm glued
all day
to my
long.
Computer. It's crazy.
And also, you can check out my own website, which is kenmichaelsradio.com. You can find out about my radio program called Every Little Thing, which is currently on 18 stations in the country. You can also listen to interviews on the website that I've done with people connected to the Beatles, and also play along with Beatles trivia every single week and win terrific prizes. Not only that, we have our own email address now, which is, tell them, Steve.
Please said today radio show at gmail.com.
That's right. And we'd love to hear from you with suggestions of what you'd like us to cover here on the show, and just your comments about what you think about the show if you listen on a regular basis, and what you might want to hear more of.
And you can get the show through iTunes, which you may be doing already, or you can get it on podbean.com. You can, if you have an Apple device, if you get the podcast app, you can reach us through there. There's all sorts of ways to get us.
Okay, so thanks so much for listening. I'm Ken Michaels, joined by Steve Marinucci.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next time.